Well, let's start with the key piece of this framework, consolidation of Christina's five Wilmington schools into two. Where does that stand right now? What does it look like right now?
Well, it's hard to believe that I'm saying this, but it took 6 months of talking and 2 months of passing a draft document back and forth just to get this memorandum of understanding approved. And not only is that just the first step in the process, but it might well turn out to be one of the easiest. So what do we have now? First, we've got an agreement that kids in five Christina schools in Wilmington will be moved into two buildings, Bancroft on the east side and Byard on the west side, in either a kindergarten through eighth grade or a first through eighth grade configuration. Kindergarten students may wind up at Stubbs Elementary. That's going to depend upon the final decision on where to put what they're calling a dual generation center, a place that's offering early childhood services for preschoolers and education, employment, and social services for adults. We've also got, in principle, a commitment for extra state funds, plans for a longer school day and a longer school year, after-school programs, incentives for teachers, and a bunch of other things that are intended to improve the learning environment. But all those details aren't spelled out. That comes next.
And not everyone is quite on board with this approach, this K through 8 or 1 through 8 configuration. What is the criticism of this approach?
Okay, so the school configuration is definitely an issue for some people. And the critics say it takes the kids out of their neighborhoods, so that weakens community bonds. They also don't think first graders and eighth graders should be in the same building. They worry about big kids bullying little kids, kids from rival turf causing disruption. Now, on the other hand, we know that Catholic schools have worked fairly well for years with a K through 8 or 1 through 8 model. And there's something to be said for going to the same school as your big brother or big sister, and for the continuity that staying in the same place for several years can bring.
And certainly, I think there's also that possibility of, as we've kind of talked about before, the idea of having those wraparound services and all very convenient for a family in one location.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a key point that the state has been making in this entire discussion. If you've got after-school programs, if you've got health services, all of those extra things that they're planning on adding on, if you've got that all in one place, it's easier to offer them and in a more concentrated way.
There are some pieces of this, though, that are getting some praise, and at least one that has drawn fairly universal praise, school hours. What's the plan with school hours under this MOU?
Well, okay, well, I don't know the exact time, start and close times of the schools, but, I mean, middle schools tend to start around 8 a.m., maybe a little bit earlier than that, and get out around 2, perhaps a little bit later. Elementary schools tend to start around 8:30. Under the MOU, no school in this plan would begin classes before 8:30 in the morning. This means that kids can sleep for a half an hour to an hour later in the morning. And on the back end, when you factor in the longer school day and the after-school programs that would be available, kids will still be in the school building until 3, maybe until 4 o'clock. You know, and this reduces the time that they're on the streets or perhaps at home unsupervised waiting for their parents to get back from work. If the kids get more sleep, they're going to be more ready to learn, less likely to miss school. If they're in school later, that means there's less time for them to get into trouble in the afternoons.
As I said in the intro to this segment, and as you point out in your piece, this is just a framework, and the devil is always in hammering out the details. Certainly one of those details is the timing of all this. A couple of benchmarks need to be reached. What are the kind of key benchmarks that we're looking at that have to be reached for this thing to even move forward from here?
Well, I'm not going to get into all of them, but the first two are March 31st and June 1st. These are the designated start and end dates for the school board and the Christina Education Association to work out a separate MOU on teacher pay and working conditions. The teachers union has been participating in all these meetings the last 6 months, but it really hasn't been very vocal. If they've got problems with the way this situation is developing, we're going to hear about it soon. But, you know, we are talking about extra pay and other incentives for working longer hours and a longer school year, and there's a limited amount of money in the pot for the district to work with. It would be nice for these negotiations to go smoothly, but I'm not going to bet on it. Now, the next big deadline is June 30th, and that's the end of the General Assembly's regular session, and that's all about the money.
And, of course, we talk about that all the time when it comes to this, the funding of it. How is this all going to be paid for? What are people saying about that part of the equation?
Okay, well, a couple of things here. First of all, the state is going to put up $2 million to get the dual generation center started, and another $1.5 million, which would be increased by 2% a year for this extra programming in the schools. But the General Assembly has to include that money in the budget. Now, related point here, most people that I've talked to say that an additional $1.5 million a year won't be enough to meet many of the needs of Christina schools in Wilmington. Second issue for the General Assembly. Governor Carney wants approval for a $15 million bond issue for renovations at Bancroft and Byard, and he wants to do it with an 80-20 state-local split rather than the traditional 60-40 split. Okay, so this may be a special case, but it's not a guaranteed easy sell. Now, related to that, one other step that's not specifically in the MOU, Christina's 20% share of that would be another $3.75 million. That's going to require Christina to go to a referendum, and passage would most likely depend on support from suburban voters, who wouldn't be seeing necessarily any improvements in the schools they attend if the tax hike is approved. So there's another tough sell there. So we've got deadlines and we've got money issues.
And the other tough sell that we've seen in the past is trying to get downstate and central Delaware legislators on board for this kind of money. Now, the one thing that Governor Carney has done this time is he's turned his opportunity grant program into one that is not a competitive grant, but it's going to be automatically sent to high-need schools, schools with high English language learners. Do you have a sense that that may be enough to get the buy-in necessary to get the money for the Wilmington schools from those lawmakers who've kind of balked unless there was money for other districts?
I think it might in terms of the operating funds. I'm not quite sure how this plays in terms of the $15 million bond issue for the school renovations, because you know this is again a special case and moving from a traditional 60-40 split to an 80-20 split, a lesser local share. I don't know how easy that's going to be to sell, but you know, if I'm told that the governor is giving it his best shot, so we'll have to see how effective he can be in cajoling the General Assembly on this piece.
And the one thing that has often not been discussed is how those directly affected by all this feel about this framework and this plan going forward, specifically the parents of students at these schools. How do the parties involved seeing getting buy-in from families involved?
Well, back in August, it seemed like there was a great effort put into getting parents into these public meetings and hearings. I mean, Governor Carney even went door to door, knocking on doors, telling people, hey, you know, we've got these meetings coming up, please attend, and so on. But parental participation tailed off as this whole process droned on. I mean, it was long. There were more meetings and meetings and meetings, and everything seemed to be moving at a snail's pace, really. Parents and community leaders did offer a lot of suggestions as well in those early meetings, but it was hard to keep them focused on key themes. I mean, they were all over the lot, and I don't mean to diminish the importance of one thing or another, but you start talking about the need for arts education in the school, and something else about more programs for low income children, and it was just all over the place, and it would be hard for anyone to try to boil that down and put it into an easily organized, easier to implement sort of package. So the bottom line was that a lot of people felt that there really wasn't enough community input, and whatever input there was wasn't heeded quite as much as it should be. So now moving forward, the work is going to focus even more on the details, and there's going to have to be more parent involvement. Everyone seems to want to hear more from parents, but it's a two-way street. You have to do better outreach to get the feedback that you're looking for, and it's really crucial that this happen. After all, if parents don't buy into the plan, it's not going to work. And now we just have to sit back and see what happens.
Comparatively speaking to with what we've seen before, specifically the Wilmington Education Improvement Commission, how does this look? How does this seem to be moving as compared to previous processes like that?
Well, I think in some respects this is a little bit better, emphasis on a little bit. The governor has made more of a commitment and more advocacy for the additional funding than he did last year, or the former Governor Mark Held did the year before that. So that's a bit of progress. And, I mean, you do have the Christina Board of Education signing on to this. So, yeah, that part of it is progress. They have not accepted, the governor's office, the state have not accepted the extensive funding recommendations that WEAC made, changing the formula for English language learners, special ed kids in high poverty areas. So, I mean, in that respect, yeah, it seems that the money is really not there. It doesn't seem that the money's going to be adequate. But this is a step forward. You've got to step, you've got to take these baby steps, I guess, if you're going to get anywhere. Part of my concern over the long haul, even if this does move forward, is these baby steps get implemented and some people say, hey, it's working, and then they're going to say, well, we did that, so that's enough. And what's going on here right now is likely not to be enough. It's got to be viewed as merely a starting point.